B-Pod Studios.
The Mike Missinelli Show.
It is 3:27 on the Mike Missinelli Show. As we have General Knowledge Wednesday today, but we like to talk about other things. One of the things we've been doing since sports has shut down is getting to know our favorite people from NBC Sports Philadelphia, and we have another one on today, and he's one of our faves. And the last time we talked to him, he was like on a Dumb and Dumber trip, a road trip down to Florida with Ricky Pitalico. And so let's welcome him in right now, covering the Phillies for NBC Sports Philly on the Comcast Business Hotline Beyond Fast. The great Jim Salisbury joins us. Hello, Jim.
Hey, how you doing, Mike? Stay safe.
We are, and I know you are as well. And yeah, a man without an island right now. So describe to me how this has been going, trying to cover baseball from a remote location inside your home.
Well, that's kind of the way we cover it in the winter. So it feels like an extended off season, though off seasons are usually dominated by transactions and whatnot, and acquisitions and things. And right now there's a freeze on all that. So really just trying to generate some, find out what's going on, keep people posted in this unusual time, and maybe, you know, here and there, maybe generate a story or two, maybe looking back at something that happened in baseball, something that happened with the Phillies over a period of time. And right now, Mike, I'm actually working on a story for our website, NBCSportsPhiladelphia.com, about my favorite Phillies home opener. And that was in 1994. It was actually the first year I was covering the team. And it was when John Kruk literally rolled out of a radiation treatment and hit a ringing double to the gap, and 59,000 people went crazy. And I get chills every time I think of it. So I'm kind of writing a little story about that that'll go up tomorrow.
That's very interesting. And I remember that specifically. He had that cancer scare.
Right. And of course, tomorrow was the scheduled home opener. So that's kind of the hook.
Yeah. Okay. You know, let me ask, and nobody knows here, but when we think about baseball, we think, okay, eventually baseball will start again. It's such a long season. They pick it up in June. Spring training can start, Memorial Day, whatever. But those plans are now thrown way up into the air. So what do you see as the future right now? And that was just guesswork, but what's your feel for it?
You know, that's the right way to look at it. It's all guesswork. Nobody knows. I mean, we're all at the mercy of this beast. My feel is that there will be some sort of a baseball season this year. There will be some baseball in 2020. What it looks like, when it happens, I don't know. I really don't know. One minute I think it could be sooner rather than later, and another minute I think it's going to be later rather than sooner. I see yesterday, like the fifth biggest city in North America is Toronto, and they have a ban on public gatherings through the month of June. And they have three sports that they want to get going. Boy, I just think that has to resonate all over the sports world, and it makes you wonder, though, if and when we're even going to see sports start up. And I hear all this talk about playing games in empty stadiums, and boy, that's going to be talk about emotionless sporting events. That's going to really take a lot of the juice out of it. But you know, to put on a game even in front of no fans, I mean, you're talking about clubhouses that are full with staff and players and trainers, and then you're talking about TV production crews, and you're talking about grounds crews. It's not like these stadiums don't have action going on underneath, don't have people gathering by probably the hundreds. So you just wonder if they can even open the gates with no fans without falling under the category of a gathering, where there would be some danger of the virus being passed, depending on where it's peaked in its spread. So I do not know what's going to happen, but I can tell you, I miss it. I miss baseball. I mean, my biological clock tells me I should be driving to the stadium or at the stadium by now. It's been the game of baseball, really all sports, just a constant in my life from day one. I'm sure you're the same way, and we really miss it.
Have you been in contact with the Phillies? Do they have any idea, the staff, the players, the manager? Like, what are they doing right now?
I've been in contact with some folks. you know, the office is shut down. The stadium is shut down. They have, you know, some security, I think a skeleton staff. You know, they maintain some security 24 hours over there, but I don't think there's many people going through there. I think they check the stadium and they go home. You know, the offices are closed, the front offices are closed, front office is working from home. Players are home. There's still a couple down in Florida from what I've heard, but the facility in Florida is now closed, so you can't work out there. Guys are just going through their workouts at home, sort of in a, almost in a December mode where you, you know, working on your body, keeping your arm loose and things like that. I caught up with a minor leaguer named Zach Warren the other day. He lives out here in Chester County. He bought a couple pitchbacks and he's out in the yard, you know, flinging it around, trying to stay loose, doing his running, doing his band work and throwing. And that's kind of what guys are doing, all over the place, waiting to hear what's going to happen next. Nobody knows really how to ramp up and gear their workouts because nobody knows when it's going to start up again.
See, the thing about baseball, Jim, and what's the problem, like, especially when it comes to pitchers, they need time to prepare for a season. And when this, absolutely, when they get the green light, you're talking about having to almost start over again and how long it'll take guys to get stretched out and all this thing to be able to pitch in a major league game. So
they have to start over again. And, you know, if this was 2 weeks, then maybe you could, you know, short it up a little bit. But, you know, the investment in these pitchers is so great. And the earning power in the pitching arm is so great that everybody's going to want to be careful on every side. They're going to have to start pretty much from day one, I believe. You're looking at probably a month-long ramp-up,
wow,
guys.
Oh, what? So you're talking about...
You cannot risk injury, you know? I mean, when we left Clearwater over 2 weeks ago, you know, I was like, well, you know, if this is just a month, maybe they can convene in Philadelphia, work out for a couple weeks, if the pitchers can stay in Florida and keep throwing. But, you know, they've dispersed now, and they're going to need a full ramp-up. They're going to need some competitive innings. Hitters are going to need competitive at-bats. They're probably going to have to go back to Florida. I think a team like the Phillies could train right here in Philadelphia because you got two minor league teams an hour away. The weather is getting good, and you got the Orioles and you got the Yankees. I mean, those trips are no farther than Port Charlotte. But then you have teams like the Braves and the Arizona team and the Colorado team, Seattle. They have nowhere to go. And the more you think about it, these teams are going to have to go back to their training facilities for reps and to build it back up because, you know, to rush this thing and risk injury would just be foolish. And the players aren't going to let that happen. The agents aren't going to let that happen. The teams aren't going to let that happen.
Let's say 4 weeks is reasonable to get back in tune. Now, we have no idea when it's going to start because they're predicting things are going to get worse. And then there's a prediction that maybe a second wave comes through in September. But let's take best case scenario and you blow out August and spring training and you can't start the season until September. Is it even worth at that point having a season?
I don't think so if it's that late. I really don't think so. You know, I hear people talking about playing through the holidays. I have a tough time conceiving that because now you're bumping right up against next spring, you know, and have the pitchers had enough downtime? I just think there's a lot of difficulty playing that late. I'd be, if they're not on the field by, you know, the All-Star break, I think you have to seriously, evaluate whether or not there's going to be a season or not.
We're talking to Jim Salisbury, NBC Sports Philly. Jim, let's get into a little bit of your history. And I know a baseball beat writer, in my view, is the hardest thing that anybody could do in journalism. And you've done it for a really long time. And, you know, Jason Stark revealed at his Hall of Fame induction that he knew what he wanted to do at a really young age. Were you that way? And how did you get involved in the business of covering baseball as a journalist? And take me through your career.
Wow. My dad was a teacher and a coach, and my mom was a voracious reader. So in our house, we had baseballs and hockey pucks and newspapers and books all over the place. So,
and that's because you grew up in Massachusetts, right? So you had the hockey influence?
I grew up in Rhode Island.
Oh, Rhode Island. Okay, my bad. Okay.
I was a hockey. I grew up 40 miles from Boston. I was a hockey player and a baseball player. And my dad was a high school baseball coach. He actually did some scouting for the Brewers and the Seattle Pilots. So baseball was a, you know, it was a constant in our house. Hockey and baseball was it. And so was reading. And my mother, you know, we read books and we played sports. So I always, I loved the sports page. It would arrive every day in the house at like 3 o'clock. And on weekends, we'd have the Boston papers and we'd have the Providence papers. And I would read the sports page on my hands and knees in the living room every day. It was so much fun. And that's kind of how I got bitten by the bug. And, you know, you grow up dreaming of getting to the big leagues. And, you know, you find out, well, maybe my strengths are in watching and writing about it. And you get to the big leagues another way. So, yeah, I always wanted to cover big league baseball. Grew up, you know, watching the Red Sox, reading the Boston Globe. I read all those great writers, Peter Gammons. And, you know, I was really lucky to get a job covering the Red Sox AAA team in Pawtucket right out of college. And, you know, I remember the guy who hired me said, you know, come for a year or two and you got to keep moving in this business, keep moving. And I stayed 6 years and I got very frustrated. And I went back to school and got my education degree. I was going to go teach and coach, and nothing was clicking for me in my career. And then finally I got a job down here in Philadelphia.
So were you working for the Providence Journal?
I started at the Providence Journal. Okay. I was at the Pawtucket Times. I was all over the place. Yeah, it was, you know, I got to cover a lot of different things growing up. You know, one night I could be at a Little League game, a playoff Little League game, and another night I could be in Fenway Park. So it was a great place to really cut your teeth, and then coming down here has been, you know, a real blessing.
Yeah, now you got here in 1994, right? So
right.
You replaced Frank Fitzpatrick. I left the Inquirer in 92. Fitzpatrick was the beat writer at the time, and you replaced him?
I actually came down and worked at some Suburbans in Norristown and then Bucks County.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and then I went to the New York Post. So I went to the New York Post, worked with Anthony Gargano up there. And the story about that, you know, I was looking to cover baseball, and I had interviewed at the New York Daily News. This is such a crazy story, man. Like, the newspaper war way back when in New York was great. So I interviewed for the backup baseball writing job at the New York Daily News, and it was going to be filling in on the Yankees and Mets. And you know, I was all for it. It was going to be a great job. Interviewed for it, did not get it. I don't think I was going to get it, but like I interviewed at the New York Daily News on a Monday, and on Tuesday morning I got a call from the editor of the New York Post asking me if I wanted to come up and talk about a job. Basically, they had a mole in the Daily News and they knew what was going on over there. Turns out they were looking for somebody. He called me up and he hired me on the spot. I took the job. So I was being hired at the Post in I guess this was January of 96. And I was going to be hired at the Post to do backup baseball, help out on baseball, both teams. And Joel Sherman was the Yankee beat guy, and he got an offer from the Newark Star-Ledger to go over and be a columnist. He parlayed that into becoming a columnist at the New York Post, where he still is. And they threw me on the Yankees beat for the 1996 season. And, I mean, you talk about a storybook year to cover
wow.
the Yankees.
They went, covered the World Series. Yeah.
Yeah, Jeter's rookie year, Joe Torre. I mean, what a freaking education that was. I mean, you know, competing against those jackals up there. I mean, I'm telling you, it was a great, great experience and a great learning experience. And from there, I got hired at the Inquirer the very, you know, I was only in New York maybe 10 or 11 months. I got hired, and then, but, you know, I covered Jeter's rookie year when Jeter, and Joe Girardi, that was his first year in Yankee pinstripe. Uh-huh. And, you know, I was in the, you know, get to ride in the World Series parade, cover it from that angle. It was really exciting, but I actually got to know Derek Jeter before he was Derek Jeter, and before he became Derek Jeter, the corporation, and he became so kind of guarded, naturally so. I think you have to kind of be that way. But I remember doing a story on Jeter once late in the season, and we were talking about his upbringing and his mom and his dad. And I asked him, I said, you got your dad's phone number? I'd like to ask him a couple questions. He gives me the dad's phone number. I didn't get to the story right away. So in November, before he was going to be named the Rookie of the Year, I needed a walk-up story. So I called the mom and dad. I had their number. The kid had given me their number. And you know, I had a great time talking to these folks, talking about Derek growing up and what he was like as a kid. And the mother told me my pretty much my all-time favorite story about, you know, how baseball players are kids with big dreams, just like all of us. She said, you know, when Derek was in middle school and in high school, he would come in our bedroom every night and imitate Dwight Gooden's pitching motion in the full-length mirror behind our door. And we'd have to kick him out of our room every night. We'd say, Derek, go to bed. And he'd be there imitating Doc Gooden's pitching delivery. And they're like, and now he played shortstop behind Doc Gooden. And I just kind of love that story of Derek Jeter as a kid imitating Doc Gooden's pitching delivery in the mirror.
That's great. Such an innocent little Derek Jeter. And then, yeah. You know, years later, he'd be giving out gift baskets to women he would kick out to cat the condo, right?
That's right. He was a different guy then, and that was before the gift baskets, I bet.
All right, last question. So you worked for Bucks County Carrier Times, and then Times Herald, I assume, that if you're in Bucks County.
Yep.
Okay,
yep.
I worked for, that was my hometown newspaper. I worked for them for a little bit. So the last question is, I know how hard newspapers gets in your blood. So when you finally made that leap away from newspapers, were you trying to get ahead of the curve, or was it just a better offer? Did you see where the newspaper industry was going?
I did, and I was a little scared. There were talk of furloughs at the Inquirer, and there was also a lot of talk at the time of kind of diversifying yourself and becoming a little more multimedia, kind of like you did earlier in your career. So all of that kind of played into it. But yeah, I was scared of the downturn in the newspaper business, and that made the jump when NBC came a call, and it made it a little more attractive. But, you know, I'll always be an ink-stained wretch, Mike.
I know.
I taught myself to write by reading the Providence Journal on my hands and knees in the living room. I literally did that.
You know, I did the same thing with the Philadelphia Bulletin growing up.
Yeah, so. But I read Sports Illustrated. When Sports Illustrated would come on Thursdays, it was very exciting. But, you know, and you know, even when I started working at the Inquirer, I remember driving home to here where I live in Westchester, and I can remember getting home at 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning, and not being able to sleep. And you'd hear the driveway land in the paper land in the driveway at like 4 a.m. If I was awake, I'd go out and get it, read it.
Yeah.
You know, I was crazy about newspapers.
I know, it was a different time, man.
And I still am crazy about newspapers.
Yeah, it taught us all. You learn to write by reading.
And I'm crazy about good writing and good storytelling. And you know, thankfully, we can still do that digitally and on the internet. And there's a lot of great, great guys out there. I love reading.
Well, keep it going, man. We'll look forward to this return whenever it happens. And hang in there. Thanks for coming on. I enjoyed it.
Thanks for having me, guys.
There he is. Jim Salisbury, Comcast Business Hotline, Beyond Fast.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.